quantum geotransmitter dynamics.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. First, I'd like to thank Jorge Pullin and the institution for the opportunity to speak today. I've prepared a presentation on intrinsic time quantum geometrodynamics, and I have a slide presentation, which if you can access the slides, I will just go through them and give you the outline of the talk.
Just tell us when to flip over the slides, okay?
Oh, okay. Tell you when to flip the slides, okay?
Yeah.
And if there are any questions during the talk, by all means, please don't hesitate. Okay. So the outline of the talk. This will be a talk on intrinsic time quantum geometrodynamics, ITQG, which is a new approach for quantizing the gravitational field, which I've just gotten published with some with my collaborators. My co-authors are based in Taiwan. So I'll first give you an introduction, because what we're attempting to do is we're attempting to try and reconcile the axioms of quantum mechanics with gravity in the canonical approach. And this has led us to this intrinsic time quantum geometrodynamics, which provides a proposal for this this endeavor. So I'll go into the axioms of quantum mechanics, and then how we try and approach that from canonical gravity, the geometric decomposition of the fundamental variables, commutation relations. We have a set of variables which uses the metric and a momentric variable, which I'll explain. And the theory has a certain group theoretical structure related to SU3. Show you how to resolve the free theory and then the interacting theory, which takes into account an interaction potential, and then some phenomenological ramifications of the theory. And a summary. Any questions so far? Okay, next slide. So, a major unsolved problem in theoretical physics is a consistent unification of gravitation with quantum mechanics. So starting with Einstein's theory of general relativity, which is a manifestation of space-time geometry as measured through this metric, which measures space-time intervals. We would like to reconcile that with quantum mechanics, which describes physics on small scale, where the wave-particle duality of matter becomes manifest. So there is a tension between these two theories, which they're unparalleled in their accuracy and precision, as confirmed by standard experimental tests. But trying to reconcile them with each other has led to a kind of impasse. Next slide. So, starting with the axioms of quantum mechanics, the quantum mechanical the state of a quantum mechanical system should be described by a wave function of the basic variables, and the wave function psi should have a conserved probability shown, And then to each observable in classical mechanics, there should correspond a linear Hermitian operator in quantum mechanics. And the measurement of any such observable should yield one of the eigenvalues, which can also be given in terms of the expectation value of the observable. And then the wave function should evolve in time according to some kind of Schrödinger equation. In this case, it's a first-order evolution equation involving a Hamiltonian, which governs the evolution with respect to a time. And then in field theory, we'd like to apply these quantum mechanical axioms to systems with an infinite number of degrees of freedom. In particular, we'd like to apply them to general relativity as a field theory. But as we'll see, the axioms can be applied to the kind of modification of GR as we understand it. Next slide. So let's suppose we try and apply the canonical decomposition to general relativity. Then this leads to the realization that it's a totally constrained system with a vanishing Hamiltonian. And this is a manifestation of the implementation of space-time covariance, which implies the existence of four first-class constraints. We have a diffeomorphism constraint, three of them, and one Hamiltonian constraint. And according to Paul Dirac, these first-class constraints are the generators of gauge transformations. So in a sense, they're devoid of physical ramifications. Now, to implement these constraints at the quantum level requires the implementation of this concept of space-time covariance at a quantum level, which leads to difficulties. One of the difficulties is that these constraints, the constraint algebra fails to reproduce the algebra of space-time diffeomorphisms at the quantum level. So essentially what we have is, in attempting to reproduce the algebra of space-time diffeomorphisms through the canonical approach, we can only achieve that on shell. So when the classical equations of motion are satisfied. Of course, in any quantum realization, all configurations must be realizable, even those not solving the classical equations of motion. So this will bring us to a paradigm shift as we implement this space-time covariance. Another difficulty is the so-called Wheeler-DeWitt equation, which is a second-order functional differential equation, which leads to difficulties such as the problem of time, wherein the Hamiltonian fails to generate evolution. And the Wheeler-DeWitt equation also has singular operator products in field theory associated with the quadratic term in the momentum. And there are also factor ordering ambiguities that come into play. And another aspect is, on account of the second order nature of the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, there is a lack of a positive definite conserved probability density, which is necessary to confer upon this a quantum mechanical interpretation. As well, it's known that general relativity is perturbatively non-renormalizable as a relativistic quantum field theory. And that combined with the desire to implement Einstein's concept of space-time covariance and unitarity leads to tension between the two concepts. So as I mentioned, this non-perturbative canonical approach fails to reproduce the classical algebra of space-time diffeomorphisms at a quantum level. So what is needed is a paradigm shift. When we realize that the concept of space-time diffeomorphism invariance can only be implemented classically, then the next best thing that we can achieve with my collaborators is we implement three-dimensional spatial diffeomorphism invariance combined with evolution with respect to an intrinsic time.
Please don't forget to tell us when to change slides.
Oh, yes. Change slides.
So presumably you're on the slide that says intrinsic time quantum geodetermodynamics on the title?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes, my apologies. So in intrinsic time quantum geometrodynamics, we need to try and resolve the problem of time. And by defining a time with respect to which intervals can be measured by observers on clocks in space-time solving Einstein's equations, they can be reconciled with the time intervals with respect to the unitary evolution of the wave function of the universe. So the paradigm shift, the claim is that the paradigm shift to 3D spatial covariance combined with intrinsic time evolution will reconcile the difficulties that we have identified. And here's the paper. The journal reference is by my co-authors Chopin Su and Hoi Lai Yu and myself in Progress of Theoretical and Experimental Physics 2015, 083E01, which is 8 pages. Moving to the next slide. So we start with the fundamental variables. Now, if we take the standard ADM metric variables, which are the three metric and its conjugate momentum, we can read off a canonical one form, and then we can single out a canonical pair of variables, which is the natural log of the determinant of the spatial three metric to the one-third power, and the momentum conjugate to that is the trace of the ADM momentum. So that forms a canonical pair, and then the remaining degrees of freedom can be isolated to this set, which involve a unimodular spatial three metric. So that Q bar IJ is a three metric with a unit determinant. So we've divided out the determinant of the three metric. And then we also have a momentric variable, which is traceless. So this this E bar IJMN at the top is a traceless projector. And you can think of it as being a Wheelbine for the supermetric. It's sort of the square root of the Wheeler-DeWitt metric, spatial metric, and it projects the traceless part of the momentric variable. And these are not exactly canonically conjugate. In fact, they give you a non-canonical set of variables. Then performing a Hodge decomposition of the natural log of the determinant to the one-third power, the Hodge decomposition for compact manifolds without boundary enables us to single out an intrinsic time variable, which is a three-dimensional diffeomorphism invariant degree of freedom embedded in this LNQ to the one-third power. And what I've done is I've separated out a gauge degree of freedom in this nabla of delta n sub I. So that essentially isolates the gauge invariant part of the intrinsic time. The gauge invariant part, which is diffeomorphism invariant, which identifies the intrinsic time interval. Now, moving to the next slide. So we can now define a quantum theory with respect to this intrinsic time using a Schrödinger equation. And the Schrödinger equation involves a physical Hamiltonian, which is given by this integral of a density of weight one object, which has a square root of a kinetic term plus a potential term. Now, this Schrödinger equation, because it's first order in with respect to intrinsic time evolution, we're guaranteed to have unitary time evolution. And we're also going to be guaranteed to have a positive definite conserved probability density. So this is necessary for a quantum mechanical interpretation. Now, if you'll notice, the physical Hamiltonian is given by this density weight one object. And we can define a unitary evolution operator in intrinsic time. And for a special choice of the potential, this potential V of Q, for example, if we choose it to be the three-dimensional Ricci scalar, curvature scalar, minus two times an effective cosmological constant, then this would represent the a Hamiltonian for Einstein's GR for a particular choice of beta. So this reproduces Einstein's GR. Now, moving back, going to the next slide, moving on to the fundamental commutation relations of the basic variables. Notice that we have the metric, which has its commutation relations, a unimodular metric. And then there are relations between the metric and the momentric variable, which gives us back the traceless projector. And then we also have a set of relations among the momentric variables. So the nice thing about these commutation relations is that, one, we're guaranteed to have self-adjoint variables. So the momentric can be implemented as a self-adjoint traceless operator, which would not be the case with a standard ADM momentum. Also, it preserves positivity of the three metric, of the spatial metric and unimodularity. This is important because in any quantum theory of gravity, it's important to preserve the positivity of the spatial three metric at the quantum level. And this guarantees the positivity of spatial distances, measured distances. And then, of course, unimodularity is preserved as well, which guarantees the phase space integrity. You'll notice that in the commutation relations for the momentric, these look like an SU3 Lie algebra. So it confers a Lie algebraic interpretation on the commutation relations. And then a nice aspect of it is that the kinetic operator in the Wheeler-DeWitt equation turns out to be the quadratic Casimir of this this SU3. This gives us a few advantages. Now, the momentric variables, if they're written in dimensionless form, they actually take the interpretation as a set of SU3 generators. So we can get dimensionless variables by dividing the momentric by Planck's constant, and then this delta of zero is a three-dimensional delta function, which will be regularized. So in these dimensionless form, then we can see that the momentric variables produce a Lie algebra of SU3. So these are the SU3 structure constants. And the lambda sub A are Gell-Mann matrices. So we can think of it as we have an octet of momentric variables which transform into an octet of SU3 generators. And in the functional Schrodinger representation, the momentric variable can be realized by functional differentiation of the wave function, as shown with a projector. And then there's a natural Hilbert space basis of these SU3 multiplets that appear in the eightfold way. So a typical state will be labeled by the eigenvalues of the quadratic Casimir and the cubic Casimir for SU3, the isospin generators, as well as the Cartan subalgebra. So these multiplets are familiar from the eightfold way, and they'll provide a basis for expansion of the physical Hilbert space. Now, moving on to how we implement a general theory for a general potential. One finds out by solving the Heisenberg equations of motion that that the intrinsic time scales as the natural log of the volume of the universe, the spatial three volume of the universe, which is also a diffeomorphism in varied quantity. And the Hamiltonian is given by the square root of the kinetic operator plus a potential term. And you'll notice that this kinetic operator is the quadratic Casimir invariant, which is also the Wheeler-DeWitt operator. And so this provides a method of resolving the singular operator products that appear in the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, and it also renders it finite. Because this Laplacian operator has a well-defined spectrum, positive, definite, and so on and so forth. To take into account the interacting theory, which uses a general potential V, for the free theory, we take the potential to equal zero, and that gives us the eightfold way multiplets as our Hilbert space. Next slide. And then to bring into play interactions, we can do so by a similarity transformation of the momentric operator. So we have these non-Hermitian operators that are generated by a diffeomorphism invariant functional W of the spatial three metric. And this gives us a new Hamiltonian, which is self-adjoint, semi-positive definite. And then in the physical Hamiltonian, when we integrate it over three space, it's three-dimensional diffeomorphism invariant, not intrinsic time reversal invariant. And by this approach, we can introduce a non-trivial interaction potential, which gives us phenomenologically interesting extensions of GR, which include UV completeness of GR. To give an example of a potential, for that W function, let's say that we take a Chern-Simons functional of the 3 metric. So this is of the 3 metric of the Levi-Civita connection, as well as the Einstein-Hilbert action in 3 dimensions. So that will form W, weighted by respective coupling constants. So if we substitute this into the expression for the momentric operator, moving to the previous slide where I've defined Qij, then moving to the next slide, we see that we get a Hamiltonian with a potential that includes a Cotton-York tensor, which is a kind of conformally invariant part of the potential. And then we can construct a ground state for this theory. We can construct a normalizable ground state, because it's given by the partition function of this this functional e to the w, which is UV complete on account of the cubic dependence on momentum. Moving to the next slide, we can now look at some phenomenological implications. So in the early universe, for example, since we're measuring time according to intrinsic time, the early universe is an era that we refer to as the era of Cotton-York dominance. And looking at the Hamiltonian, using the Cotton-York potential, which comes from a W given by the Chern-Simons theory, in this case, there is no zero-point energy in the Hamiltonian. And it gives us a universe which can be realized as from an S3 geometry, which is conformally flat and compatible with the Penrose hypothesis of vanishing vial curvature. And for this state, we can expect to find primordial gravitational waves as evidence from the two-point correlation functions about the extrema of this state. And then in the late universe, we can see that the Hamiltonian, that Q dagger Q term that we introduced, now incorporates a zero-point energy term, which was absent in the previous case. And then in this case, we can actually get an emergence of Einstein-Hilbert gravity in the Hamiltonian. So this comes from a heat kernel regularization for this commutator. And the idea is we get GR as coming out as this this commutator comes out as a Ricci curvature term, and then we get a cosmological term. And then the idea is that Einstein's GR would dominate at low curvatures where this Ricci term becomes dominant. And then these other terms involving curvature squared terms, higher derivative terms, become small. So we have Einstein's GR dominating at in a theory at low curvatures. And so this four-dimensional symmetry, as I mentioned before, then is no longer a fundamental symmetry of nature. Some additional features of the intrinsic time quantum geometric dynamics is we can write the Hamiltonian in this rather elegant form in terms of the SU3 generators. And in this form, Planck's constant basically becomes a conversion factor from the momentric variable to these dimensionless SU3 generators, which are in the form of the Q variables. And now we can write down the commutation relations in the following form. It says that the spatial 3 metric transforms in the spin 2 irreducible representation of the SU3, and the momentric variables transform in the adjoint representation as given by the SU3 algebra. And we can always retrieve spatial diffeomorphism invariance from this SU3 symmetry, which acts to provide 2 degrees of freedom via a transverse traceless parameter. So as a summary, intrinsic time quantum geometrodynamics features a physical Hamiltonian which generates unitary evolution of the wave function of the universe with respect to an intrinsic time. And so it provides a resolution to the problem of time through unitary evolution of a wave function of the universe. It provides a conserved probability which confers upon this formalism a quantum mechanical interpretation. And via a Schrodinger equation, first order Schrodinger equation, with a diffeomorphism invariant notion of time ordering and time evolution. And then another feature is that we introduce Einstein's GR as a particular case of a wider class of theories with phenomenologically rich extensions, which go into these higher derivative extensions of GR, which give us super renormalizable theory. And then, of course, a new set of fundamental commutation relations, where Planck's constant is or cancels out. For some future research, we would like to combine it with a standard model, so we can have a theory which takes into account the effect of matter coupling along with gravity on the same footing, which seems feasible now. And then, of course, searching for primordial gravitational waves, for example, with the BICEP team, for example. And then we would also like to solidify this this Weyl curvature hypothesis of Penrose. And the fundamental theory then becomes in the era of Cotton-York dominance becomes this conformally invariant theory with a Cotton-York potential. And that's all I have today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
If I may. The pages don't seem to be numbered, but I think I can just talk to the point. The Hamiltonian that you construct has a form that has appeared before. It's a square root of something which is the pi, the extrinsic curvature squared plus a v.
Yes.
And what I'm confused about is, in general relativity, the V is not positive definite. But then you use the discussion about SL3R to write the S as, to write the pi squared plus V term as the square of a Q, which makes it Hermitian and positive definite.
Yeah, but that's a good question. So what we've done is we have incorporated a positive definite potential. So the potential which appears for the GR case is, you could think of it as being an approximation. So to get the positive definite potential, you get that by the similarity transformation. Because we have the square root of Q dagger Q. So moving to the slide of the late universe, it provides a realization of the Q dagger Q term. But the Einstein-Hilbert contribution to that is this zero-point energy, which appears as a commutator between the momentric variable and the traceless part of the Ricci curvature. So it should be positive definite. This whole term should be positive definite. But it it's a kind of a higher derivative term.
So the attitude is, so I'm looking at that slide, and there's an H in the middle of it, which is complicated, and higher, and curvature squared of the form of something curvature squared, plus the commutator of pi with stuff. And your claim is that the commutator of pi with stuff has a Ricci scalar in it, and so reproduces the Einstein theory, but only for small curvatures, a long radius of curvature, and otherwise it's completed by something which is positive definite. Is that the attitude?
Yes, and so it should hold for small curvature, but there are also situations in which these higher derivative terms cancel out. So one example which comes up is, for example, in FRW geometries, this term involving the Cotton-York tensor plus the traceless part of the Ricci, those terms would be absent. Another example is black holes with Penleve Gullstrand coordinates. And so that would be a situation in which we could say that the four-dimensional covariance is indeed recovered in the limit of low curvatures.
Okay, so I think I get the picture. Just a general question: is there a relationship between your choice of this intrinsic time t related to the determinant of the three metric and which also has a preferred slicing and a preferred intrinsic time?
Oh, so a relation between the intrinsic time and the natural log?
And shape dynamics. Shape dynamics seems to have a similar philosophy, but the details are different. Is there a relationship between them?
I think there's a relationship because what we've done is we've tried to find a diffeomorphism invariant measure of this so-called intrinsic time. And there's also a method of relating these intrinsic time intervals to what observers measure on clocks.
Uh, I had another question. There seems to be a relationship between this and work that Hino and Teitelbaum and also Unruh and Wall did some time ago. What they did is they set a coordinate condition that set the determinant of the metric to 1, and then that introduces the cosmological constant and its canonically conjugate variable as an extra pair, and the canonically conjugate variable to the cosmological constant is essentially your intrinsic time. This was critiqued by Karl Kukas in his review on the problem of time. I wonder if you took a look at all that.
No, I have not. I have not seen. I am familiar with the concept of the kind of unimodular variable which has as a conjugate. It has the cosmological constant. But I have not read his review of the problem of time from this perspective of intrinsic time.
Okay, I'll email you a link then.
Okay, thanks. The way that we envisioned it is that we have a choice of the Hamiltonian that we'd like to implement, and this. This also, it has a Lagrangian formulation, so I can give you a Lagrangian, which, if you perform the decomposition of it, it will give you this a theory that that has this as its Hamiltonian. I think it's called the you know how the you can define a superspace interval. So it's kind of like a superspace interval, and it would give you the corresponding Lagrangian.
More questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you very much.